Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drance here. We're live from the Kintech studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors. For over 50 years, visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. This hour of Canucks Talk brought to you by Rack Steel. Rack Steel has the expertise to get you operating faster with forklifts and pallet racking in stock. Visit them online at racksteel.com. Giants play-by-play voice Nathan Canter will join us in about 10 minutes here. But before that, you know, we touched on it briefly in the first segment there, Drance, but Canucks backup Kevin Lankinen, after Yusei Saros gives up six goals in Finland's opening game against the U.S., some of them from distance, Kevin Lankinen will get the chance to start in a big, big game for him, for his country, tomorrow against Sweden. We all know like what a big rivalry that is. From a Canucks perspective, the Kevin Lankinen unrestricted free agent thing was already pretty complicated, right? He's played so well. He's put himself in line to get a really nice raise and a really nice deal. Now he gets to take the spotlight with, you know, literally all eyes in the NHL on this game and potentially the next game for Finland against Canada on Monday as well. And these are the kind of moments, right? I mean, like, Jordan Binnington's playing in these games in large part because of his performance in the 2019 Stanley Cup Final. Goalie performances in these big moments, they are very sticky. They have a way of lasting in people's memories, and they can really influence what people think of you. He's got a chance to do extremely well for himself, like improve his next deal by even more than he already has, and potentially make the Canucks' decision on how to proceed with Kevin Lankinen and Thatcher Demko, because it's linked, of course, even more difficult and complicated than it already is. You're on mute there, pal.
Thanks, man.
There we go.
I'm sorry. I had to sneeze while you were talking, so
good.
I muted and then forgot because I was so engrossed by your point.
So engrossed.
Because I think the overall dynamic of what the Canucks should do in net is so fascinating on so many levels. First of all, you've got Jim Rutherford, who at no point in the last decade plus – like, since the cap came in, have his team spent significant cap space on a backup?
Mm-hmm.
So, it you know, to sign Lankinen while Demko is a huge departure.
We got you.
Did my audio click
out
there?
Yeah, it clicked out for a second, but we got you back.
Okay. The huge departure from how Canucks hockey operations leadership has typically done business. So that to me is always fascinating because, you know, Rutherford talked after hours earlier this season that, hey, this might be a unique circumstance for a variety of reasons. You know what those reasons are. Thatcher Demko dealt with an unprecedented knee injury about 10 months ago. You know, over his last, like, you can go past it, over his last 21 starts, right? He's left three of them injured and sustained the most significant injury at the tail end of a fourth, one of those games. You know, this is a goaltender who's 30 years old now and has never started both or has never hit that sort of, you know, checklist in a season of starting 60 plus games, maintaining an above average save percentage and being healthy and at your best for the playoffs at the end of it. So, you know, valuing Demko is wildly difficult for those reasons. Now you've got the cap about to explode, right? And we now exist in a world where, you know, 43 goaltenders make $2 million or more against the cap. And based on reports out of Washington with, you know, Charlie Lindgren, who's got a track record career-wise to Lankinen, you know, that those negotiations have proceeded apparently pretty well, and it seems likely that Lindgren's going to come in at $3.5 million as like a set backup, basically, with Logan Thompson already done. So you're going to see a pretty significant boost in what 1B goaltenders make. You've seen that happen over the last several years anyway, especially because, you know, the workhorse starter is going the way of the dodo bird. But you know, Lankin in 3.5, 4 million, 3 or 4 years. Like, I think that's a baseline expectation, provided that he's able to just maintain the level that he's been at all season. But if he's able to do something major, like upset Sweden,
yeah,
play well against Canada,
mm-hmm.
You know, potentially start playoff games and win them for the Canucks down the stretch, you get into a different stratosphere, potentially. So he's got a lot to gain. How do the Canucks manage that? And I guess the one thing I'd note is, you know, with the cap going up, with Demko's unique considerations, given the recent injury track record, you know, are they linked? Like, can the Canucks, and should the Canucks, in fact, consider approaching this as, let's get Lankin and Dunn to protect our floor, and let's buy as much time as possible to make a decision on Demko as a way to chase ceiling? Because when that guy's on and healthy and in the net, you know, he's got the ability to be one of the five best puck stoppers on the planet in a way that I don't know that Lankin does. Yeah, do you have to allocate $2 or $3 million more in net than you might prefer to? Sure. But is that worth doing given the way that this team defends, given the identity of this group and the way it seems to be evolving with the blue line you've already built and, you know, with Volander and, you know, Elias Pettersson sort of coming, right? Should this team double down on goal prevention and then go upside hunting to land an additional star forward and sort of give themselves some runway to do that, where you're going to be a playoff team throughout that process? Difficult way to do it, but not impossible, and certainly a one that would be sustainable in a hockey market from a, you know, business perspective. So I think it's one of those questions that touches just about every aspect, right? The league-wide environment, league-wide evolution, goaltending strategy, Rutherford's history versus what's right for this team's overall identity. Like, it's all wrapped up in this question. And so, yeah, I honestly think it's one of the most fascinating ones to dissect here. And I'm sorry for digressing so much here, but, you know, to top it all off, if you were to read me a list of Canucks pending UFAs, right? Pew Suter,
yep.
Brock Besser, Kevin Lankinen, Derek Forbert, and asked me who should their number one priority be in terms of locking them up before the deadline to give them some certainty, I don't think I'd hesitate that much in answering Lankinen.
Yeah, and the interesting point about, you know, Jim Rutherford's history of not paying backups, and do you have to get uncomfortable with that to keep Lankinen around? Well, you will, right, to keep Lankinen around, and how does that... The one thing is, with Demko only making $5 million next year and only for one more year, it's a lot different than if you had a guy at, you know, $8 million who is your starter and there were question marks and you're like, oh, now we really have to go way over where we wanted to spend on the goaltending position. You're still probably set up to not be spending that much compared to some other teams around the league on your crease, and it's only for 1 year. So it does kind of feel like, I don't want to say the best of both worlds necessarily, because it still involves some tricky decision making and some compromise and all of that. But to keep Lankinen around on a deal, at least, as you said, while you kind of use next year to figure out what you have with Thatcher Demko, because I think we can all agree it's very hard to see a long-term extension with Thatcher Demko happening this summer. I don't know, maybe I'm in the minority on that, but I don't see that happening with the amount of uncertainty he has with the, as you said, the number of times he's left games with injury, even just since coming back. It's very difficult for me to see the Canucks saying, you know, yep, proactively July 1st, you're eligible. Let's go get a long-term extension for you done. So you need some certainty, I think, built into your goaltending situation beyond next year. And Lankinen is probably the best option to do that. And it's not as if you're then like, okay, well, now we have Demko and Lankinen locked up at, you know, $10 million for 3 seasons. It's kind of a 1 year transitional thing as you see what's going on with Thatcher Demko.
Yeah. I mean, the Demko one is impossible to navigate without having a really good sense of the medicals, which obviously we don't, beyond a basic descriptive understanding from Demko himself. And, you know, it's just difficult because we've even seen it across the last 10 days, what this guy looks like when he's you know, explosive and dominant, and it's incredible. We've also seen, you know, him struggle at times this season. And again, you know, there have been three of his last 20 starts have resulted in him leaving a game hurt. And then you've got the other one where he gets hurt at the end of game one in the Stanley Cup playoffs. I mean, that's just tricky, right? I'm always really reluctant to apply the injury prone label to a player, but it just does seem like Demko's been a hurt guy across, you know, since that Winnipeg injury, right? Like to me, I'd sort of demarcate what's happened since as being separate from, you know, like the head injury that he dealt with in the American League a few years ago, or, you know, the injury that he sustained toward the end of the Bruce There It Is season. You know, there is a history in which his availability has been a little bit limited or his durability hasn't been high end. But really, it just seems like there's been a rush of injuries recently that I think need to be looked at differently as sort of enhancing the risk profile. It's like getting that in the rearview mirror, you know, I think is important before this team does a like long-term deal with him. And, you know, as such, I just think it's one where, given the level that this player can be at, you know, I think you just buy yourself as much time as possible to gather intel and make as educated a bet, you know, with far more detailed medical information than we'll ever have in sort of assessing it. And so, you know, I don't see any other way to really handle it, frankly, Jamie.
And I guess the other question then is, okay, let's say you do, like, what are we talking about with Lankinen here? You know, four years of $4.5 million, 5x5, right? Like something like, I don't know. I'm just throwing it out
I would
out
say
there.
Four, four.
Okay.
As like a baseline expectation.
Yeah.
And, you know, 3x3.5, absolutely possible. 4x3.5, you know, yeah. Maybe you can build in some other devices, modified NTCs, yep, structure, yep. Bonuses, whatever,
yep.
To try and mitigate the cap hit a bit. But yeah, 3.5 to 4, I think at this point is where our baseline expectation should be. And the Canucks often come in below our baseline expectations.
That's true.
You know, including like Pettersson, Marcus Pettersson, all the Pettersons. You know, like this group does a pretty good job negotiating these deals and getting them to a reasonable level across the last year and a half, 2 years.
Because I guess the question is then, so you do the Lankinen deal, and let's say from when he comes back after the Four Nations to like January next year, Demko is healthy, playing really well, you know, injury concerns, at least then a thing of the past. Does the Lankinen contract prevent you from then going along with Thatcher Demko if that's what you want to do, right? And so I guess the key is keep it short enough or manageable enough that if you want, you have the option of trading that contract. You can get out of it relatively easily,
yeah.
If you then decide to put your eggs back in the Thatcher Demko basket.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And, you know, if I'm the Canucks too, with an eye toward that, I'd be more focused on managing the term. Right. Then the
yes.
overall money, like if you can get him at 3 years and it costs you $500K extra against the cap, so be it. Because, you know, I think term is what's always more dangerous for goaltenders, given how volatile their year over year performance is, as opposed to an overall cap number, which I think you can manage. So, yeah, it's a fascinating situation. It'll be wild to observe how the Canucks decide to navigate it.
All right. Now joining us here on Canucks Talk, we will check in with the Vancouver Giants play-by-play voice, Nathan Canter. Nathan, thanks as always for joining us. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks, guys, for having me on. Beautiful day here. Just got off the ferry on our way to Victoria. So, yeah, looking forward to Giants and Royals, a home and home starting tonight.
Very nice. And yeah, I mean, I wanted to start by asking you guys, last weekend, you handed the league-leading Everett Silvertips another loss, 6-2. They've only lost 9 times in regulations all year. You guys have handed them 2 of them. What's the secret sauce that the Giants have figured out that the rest of the WHL is missing when it comes to the Silvertips?
Well, two of those 2 wins you mentioned came at very different times. So the first one beating Everett, beginning of the season, second game, it was actually Everett's first game of the year. And this past weekend, a 6-2 win at home. One thing that's definitely in common for those 2 wins was goaltending. Burkhood was absolutely fabulous in both those games. And he, 37 of 39. Special teams were also important in that win. But For sure, Hood's performance has been the whole second half of the season since the holiday break. He's been really, really strong. It's not necessarily, I don't think the Giants figuring out the silver tips. They're still obviously a very, very good hockey team, but it was really nice to see, I think, the Giants in terms of bouncing back from what was, I think, a bit of a disappointing effort against Portland to completely flip the script and really come out guns a-blazing and show, which we've seen this season, they can beat any team in the league when they play their game. And I think we saw that against Saturday, beating Everett.
Defenseman Mazden Leslie, he was a beast in that one, as he often is for the Giants. 5 points, and he also broke the Giants' all-time career record for goals by a defenseman. That was his 50th, broke Jonathan Blum's 49-goal record, which had stood since 2009. And, you know, Mazden Leslie, I mean, I remember talking to past coaches and people around the Giants about him coming up as a 15-year-old back in the kind of pandemic-shortened season and playing on the blue line there. And he's just been such a stalwart for the team for these many years now. I know he's the captain this year, but just how has his game kind of taken that next step, and what does he mean for the Giants right now?
Oh, he means a lot. That performance that he put on at a very needed time was huge, like 5 points, two goals, to do it in record-breaking style was absolutely phenomenal. He took over the game, and Leslie has taken over, I think, a lot of games this season, to be honest. He plays in all situations, obviously, but his defensive play has come a long way. And he's just, he to answer the question, he means a lot to this team. And what's very impressive, what he did was in that 5-point game, was he didn't have his normal defensive partner, Ryan Lynn, playing with him, who that pairing has been, I think, arguably the best defensive pair, I would say, in definitely the Western Conference. You could argue in the Western Hockey League with how they've dominated, how they've controlled play, how they've done things at both ends of the ice, and both of them playing all situations. So, yeah, Leslie has been absolutely incredible, and I think that last game is the step, 17 games to go here, and I think he's only going to continue to raise his game down in the stretch here for the Giants.
Nathan, tell us a little more about this rookie goaltender, Burke Hood. How good has he been across the last month and a half, and how big a game changer has that been for the Giants?
Cannot be understated. It's really when the results started to change here in the second half for the team, I think it started with the goaltending. He's got a .928 save percentage in the last 12 starts, 12 appearances. So, that's stellar. It's really, really hard to be not just a goaltender in the Western Hockey League, where the skill is outstanding, but to be a rookie goaltender in the Western Hockey League. So he is, I think the team is, you know, he's calmed down. Like, they play differently now with the way that Hood has risen his game, elevated his game. And there's just a calmness, I think, now to the way that they play with Hood in the net. I can throw out the stats again, the .928 save percentage, and even on the season to be approaching .900 when he hasn't played at this level before is it's spectacular. And he played a back-to-back last weekend too, so the workload is interesting too. He's never played this many games, and he's been a big reason for their success.
Nathan, I know lots still on the line in terms of playoff positioning for the Giants. And as you said, home and home in Victoria today, at the LEC tomorrow against the Royals. How big are these games against a BC division opponent?
Oh, I think it's huge. And if you look ahead, I mean, it's not just Victoria. You got the Prince George Cougars on Monday, too. So it's huge, huge games. There's still four more against the Royals. So got the home and home now. You're going to have a home and home later in March, also against Victoria. Victoria's rolling. I think we need to look at that team a little differently than maybe perhaps we did at the beginning of the season with the deadline acquisitions that they made. They're now the division leader. It's been measuring stick games for the Giants the past couple of weekends against the U.S. division. And that's going to continue to be the case here against Victoria, who are Victoria's 14-3-1. in their last 18 games.
Not
so
bad.
Yeah, not bad. And, I mean, there's also a lot of interesting storylines with Victoria and Vancouver. If you look at Ryan Lynn, the 16-year-old defenseman, against Keaton Bearhoff, the 16-year-old defenseman for Victoria, or you look at the two draft-eligible forwards up front, Cole Reschny for Victoria, who's got a pile of points on an 8-game point streak, 20 in his last 8, and versus Cameron Schmidt for the Giants, two draft-eligible forwards. So there's a lot of interesting storylines as well. With these two teams, and but it is a measuring stick game. Victoria trying to pull away here in the division, and the Giants very much trying to move up in the Western Conference standings. As it stands right now, it's a potential first-round playoff matchup, which would be very, very interesting. Giants currently in seventh, and the Royals in second. So, yeah, big weekend, of course.
Nathan, thanks for taking some time to chat with us. Best of luck in the games against the Royals this weekend.
Appreciate it. Thanks so much, guys.
That is Nathan Kanter, Vancouver Giants play-by-play voice. And, of course, you can hear the Giants here on Sportsnet 650. And Mazden Leslie, always a guy that I've been keeping tabs on, Drance, because he did come up with a ton of hype to the Giants. And, you know, I think it was a couple of years ago was his draft year, and you and I were working around that time and kind of surprised that he got passed over completely in the draft. And I understand there are you know, there were at the time defensive concerns, but this was still, you know, in his draft year, like 50 points, 60 in 66 games as a 6'1" right shot defenseman, typically enough to get you drafted by an NHL team. And I do wonder, you know, I think he's eligible one more time this year if I have the eligibility rules correct. I wonder if it'll be finally his turn or if he's going to be an intriguing free agent WHL prospect. And we know the Canucks organization has liked to dip into that pool in the past.
Yeah, especially for those AHL-only contract guys, for elite WHL players whose scoring stats rock. Obviously, Archdeep Baines earned the actual two-way deal, but, you know, Chase Waters, Tristan Nielsen, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this organization has, you know, tried to find several defenders. That Schmiemann player is sort of in that template or that mold as well. So, yeah, Leslie would be absolutely one of those sorts of bets in the event that he doesn't get drafted. For what it's worth, is ranked in the top 200 among North American skaters by Central Scouting. So that's, you know, on the verge of being selected in the draft. And as you know, good size, good production, right-handed. You'd hope he gets his name called, off that stage in LA later, later this summer. But if not, that doesn't mean a lot. It's still just the start of a career regardless. And I'd expect that he'll be playing pro hockey, you know, if not next season, then honestly, maybe even down the stretch this year, get blooded in some pro games with an organization.
Can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at Rogers.com. Darren Pang, analyst for TNT, former NHL player, of course, as well. He's covering the Four Nations in Montreal. He'll join us next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, working together with you in Step 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. A final segment at 1:30. We'll be joined by Dmitry Filipovich in studio. But right now, very pleased to be joined by former NHL goalie and now TNT analyst working the Four Nations. He was between the benches for Canada-Sweden. He is Darren Pang. Darren, thanks very much for doing this today. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing fantastic. How's everything going there in Vancouver, British Columbia, one of the great cities of the world?
Oh, thank you. It's going very well, and I think I can speak for our show, certainly, and most of our listeners to say that we're really enjoying this tournament, and we are very excited for the games tomorrow, and especially the Canada-US one. And, you know, I want to start going back a couple days to Canada-Sweden, and I think for all of us watching, you know, we heard Drew Doughty say after the game that was the fastest game he's ever played. It was just such, it was such fast hockey, so much fun, up-tempo, so much skill. What was it like from your vantage point, ice level between the benches, taking that one in?
Well, I'll tell you that being beside Linus Ullmark, who backed up the Swedes that night, he was literally right beside me. And the first time McDavid went by, I looked at him. He looked at me. He kind of just gave it that, you know, that look. And I just shook my head like, oh, boy. And then the second fastest guy came roaring by in MacKinnon. So it was like, whoa, boy, here we go. So, I mean, to put it, you know, quite succinctly, the fastest rush game that I've seen through the neutral zone. You know, I mean, all you can say is what you've experienced. And from blue line to blue line, that was incredible. The first period was. It did slow down in the second and the third, not unexpectedly. I thought Sweden got their game a little bit better in the neutral zone, but I mean, that first period was somewhat overwhelming, and I was really impressed that Sweden just didn't go away meekly into the night, to be quite honest with you, because they could have easily folded the tent and said, oh boy, this is not going to be good. But they're a proud country, and I thought they did a pretty good job of adjusting to the game. But you know, the other guy for me, besides the fastest guys. And I throw Crosby in with that group as well, but Braden Point is extremely fast.
Yep.
But when Cale Makar got the puck, there's something about when Cale gets that puck. And I'm gonna just say it because of being a former goalie. If I was building a team, and people might say you're crazy, but if I'm building a team, I think I'm building it, and I'm going to start with number 8, Cale Makar. And I'll move forward from there and take my chances. But, man, every time he got the puck, I'm like, wow. Something extremely special is going to happen when that puck comes off his blade.
Yeah, and it's just pretty exceptional that it's McDavid, MacKinnon, and then, as you said, like Sidney Crosby, Braden Point, and then you have the speed element from the blue line as well. And, you know, it's one thing, like, you know, teams have to go up against the Oilers. They have to deal with McDavid's speed. They go up against the Avalanche. They have to deal with the MacKinnon-Makar pairing out there and how fast they can be. But to have a team that can come at you with waves like that, with that type of top-end speed and skill, you know, as you said, credit to Sweden for figuring it out, but it looks like it's a major challenge for teams to kind of adjust to once it's actually game time and they experience what that's like to defend.
Yeah, I mean, to have the calmness, and that's what I would call it from Sweden's point of view, saying, hey, we're a good team too, and we can adjust to this. But in the moment, I mean, it would be like playing against the 76 Canadians and the crowd gets revved up at the old Montreal Forum, and Dryden stops the puck behind the net, and Serge Savard gives it to Guy Lafleur, and he comes roaring down, and the crowd has got this anticipation about them, and it overwhelmed a whole bunch of teams back then in the 70s, and that's what it felt like in that game, to be honest with you. I call it this anticipation, or this crescendo of anticipation. There's no rink in the world that you get that from except for Montreal fans. They just see every part of the game. They boo you when you ice the puck. They, like, when you make a bad pass, you know, they know it's a bad pass. But when you get some speed going up that ice, man, if you're the opposition, you're just like, oh, shoot, here he comes again. So, you know, it's pretty, really impressive. But now you move forward and you go, okay, well, what are we going to do against the USA? Because the USA just put something special together last night against Finland, especially with the Tkachuk boys playing with Jack Eichel. So, you know, no surprise that Bennett's going to play in the game. I would anticipate Konechny slides out of that game. But it's going to be a big boy battle. It's going to be a different game than what Canada just played against the Swedes.
Yeah, Darren, you know, not just one Tkachuk, but two in an emotionally charged game feels like a dangerous thing for Canada to manage. And not just because of their size and skill, but, you know, if this game has that sort of game within a game quality to it, I don't know that that's a place you want to be at when the other team has two Tkachuks.
And especially without Shea Theodore. You know, I mean, You know, you're already without Petrangelo. Now you're without Theodore. Doughty's only played a jeepers. Now it's what has it been, 6 games?
Yeah.
Since coming back from a broken ankle.
Yep.
Man, this is going to be heavy workload on Taves and Makar, on Morrissey and Parayko, and now you got a guy like Travis Sanheim stepping into the lineup. So you know that there's going to be some targets. I think Doughty's going to be a main target that they're going to want to run him out if they can. Cale Makar, you can't run out of the building. Taves, you can't run out of the building. Parayko, you can't as well. And Morrissey's pretty elusive as well. But there'll be some targets for sure. And that is going to be difficult. Listen, the one thing I was impressed with last night, I know Brady Tkachuk and Matthew Tkachuk quite well, being an analyst in St. Louis for 14 years. I saw them grow up as boys, basically, even though I think when Brady was about 9, he was still a foot and a half taller than me and probably 20 pounds heavier. I got to be honest with you. When you put on that, you know, your national sweater, and this is his first real time. World Juniors, that's great, but this is different. This is the big boy club. I've not seen him skate so fast. I'm not sure if any of the listeners would agree with me. I've watched him play a lot of games. He was on his toes. Like, there was extra. And if he can skate that fast all the time, that's a kind of a mini Eric Lindros there. You know what I mean? Like, he can go through anybody and take a piece out of you. And so, boy, oh boy, somehow you got to stop that freight train from getting at you.
It's so funny because we're talking about two rosters with 12 first line players and 6 top pair defensemen. but what is the area for each team where you think they have an edge? So, like, what's Canada's edge? What's America's edge going into this game as you see it and as you go through your preparation, Darren?
Well, I think Americans have the edge over everybody in the goaltending department. I mean, they can throw, I think, any one of the three out there, and I think they have the advantage over any of the teams that are available. That's just me. I think Canada in net, and I know Jordan Binnington quite well. I know he's got that competitive spirit about him, and I give him a lot of credit for making some of the saves down the stretch that he made. But he's going to have a different animal in front of him. I mean, Eriksson Ek was the most prominent person in front of him in the last game. Now it's going to be Matthew Tkachuk, who's got the silkiest hands in front of the net. We saw that last night again with his hand-eye coordination. And if not him, it's Brady, and that's a mammoth of a man. And then, you know, you've got, if Kreider ends up playing, he gets the front of that. So that's going to be a big challenge for me, is how do the Canadian defensemen box out? How do they give Binnington a fighting chance? And how are they able to, you know, really to get position, not just for the first shot against, but also the hands of the net front presence that the USA is going to have against them. So all that being said, Canada's got their own, you know, their own, like, basically arsenal of weapons as well. So the Americans are thinking the same way. How are we gonna be able to stop, you know, Stone's got good hands in front of the net. McDavid and McKinnon, Reinhardt's got great hands in front of the net. So, I mean, you've got a combination of things that each team's going to have to balance themselves, you know, against. And then at the end of the day, too, when you break it all down, you get ready for a game like this, who's going to be the most disciplined? You know, you can't go in there like the 1996 World Cup of Hockey and Adam Foote and Keith Tkachuk. I mean, it's not going to work. It's, you know, you're going to put yourself in a bad spot. It's going to be who hits the hardest, and then who gets into the scrum, and then who puts their hands to their side and takes a punch in the face. And there's no one better than Matthew Tkachuk at getting under the skin of the opposition, at driving them nuts, and then somehow the opposition takes a penalty and not Matthew Tkachuk. That is the ultimate discipline that Canada's going to need in this game.
And it's kind of wild, Darren, because we're talking about a roster in Canada that has both Brad Marchand and Sam Bennett on it, right? And we're saying, like, oh, you can't get drawn into that stuff, into the agitation, into the post-whistle stuff. And they've got Brad Marchand, but I think you're absolutely right. Like, the Tkachuk brothers as a duo playing on a line together, they're just at a different level when it comes to that stuff. And then you consider, I mean, how dangerous the Canadian power play looked. We only saw it for, what, 10 seconds, but not bad when you can roll out McDavid and McKinnon and Crosby and Cale Makar together out there. And it does feel like, yeah, there's going to be all this excitement and atmosphere and emotion in this game. And there's guys who can be physical and play that game. But it might be best for Canada to, you know, not shrink away from it, but just to kind of stick to what they're doing between the whistles and have the game decided there.
Yeah, no, that is ultimately correct. At the end of the day, it's still discipline that wins the war. I mean, there's going to be a bunch of little battles that happen in the course of this game, and you've got to peck away at that. And Steve Ott was one of the peskiest players to ever play, and he always told me, he said, "I just like to go in that corner and just get a piece of skin. You got to go into the corner, and you've just got to get some skin. And if you don't get the skin, you better get the puck." And so that's why the anticipation of watching this game, it is going to be through the roof. It's going to be, you know, like I remember I've done several Olympics over the years from 98 to 02 to 2010 in Vancouver as a broadcaster. And it's just something about Canada, the USA. The USA and Russia always gets a lot of eyeballs, just going back to the history of,
yep,
of 1980 and what have you. But man, you get the Americans going up against the Canadians. And, you know, I know there's going to be it's going to be hostile from maybe the fans' point of view, maybe the Canadians' point of view, because of the political, you know, attention. But I did like what Brad Marchand said today about the anthem, and that, you know that many booed the anthem. And I'm hoping that's not the case, because it's certainly not these players' responsibility. They're playing for the United States. Many players that are from Canada live in the United States. Many, you know, I mean, so I hope that it's just the game. The game's the game. And I hope that's the focal point and not anything else.
Darren, you mentioned your time, obviously a long time covering the St. Louis Blues, and you got to be familiar with Jordan Binnington in that time. And, you know, I think around the league, fans of other teams, they kind of, maybe they see the highlights or some of the extracurriculars and the shenanigans sometimes from Jordan Binnington when the emotion gets pretty high. But we also know, you know, Stanley Cup winning goaltender, of course, we all remember. From your experience, what makes him suited to an environment, a moment like this, a game like this tomorrow?
Well, he's certainly not fazed by anything. He's if you don't know Jordan, a lot of that is when he gets involved in scrums in front of the net, or, you know, when he wants to fight somebody, or he throws a water bottle at, you know, at I think it was Kadri in the playoffs several years ago. It's like, you know, there's he's very calm minded. He thinks of things before he does things. He's I like to say he's more like John McEnroe. You know, when I'm a big tennis fan, and growing up, I was a Bjorn Borg fan until I really saw some of the intricacies of John McEnroe. And when he wasn't playing well, that's when his antics began. When he wasn't playing well and needed some energy, he broke a racket. He yelled at the umpire. He mocked things. And then all of a sudden his game turned around. And I do think that Jordan uses some of that for his own inspiration. To represent Canada isn't to be in the middle of everything. It's not to be the show. It's to be part of the culture of Team Canada. And I know he's been reminded of that from Doug Armstrong. So I think he's under control. The bottom line for me isn't going to be any of that. It's going to be, can he get from east to west and west to east? Can he get from dot to dot, post to post, against a talented team like the USA? And that's going to be the biggest challenge for him. He's not the strongest or most powerful. He doesn't have the legs like Connor Hellebuck. So, you know, sometimes the side-to-side movement can be a challenge for him. That's why I was impressed with, especially the third period and the overtime, in some of the movements that he made to make the saves that he made, three or four really brilliant saves going east to west. So when you're watching the game, that's going to be the one thing for me, is can he get from post to post quick enough to match up against the Americans?
Darren, one thing that's been fun to watch in these games, I mean, especially on Wednesday, but, you know, 10-minute 3-on-3 overtime, right? You've got 3-point regulation wins, and you saw it with Sweden and Canada both sort of trying to generate chances late, right? There was no gentleman's agreement in the last 5 minutes the way that we sometimes see in the NHL. You know, you're seeing these slightly shorter intermissions and slightly longer television timeouts. It really feels like the league is using this opportunity to trial some things. What stood out to you you know, from the first two games of this tournament as, you know, positive trial balloons that, that the league appears to be floating over the course of this two-week tournament?
Well, I agree with John Cooper in his assessment of the extra 30 seconds on the TV timeouts. It's not like the coaches were able to wrangle the players and make this some extensive timeout during the commercial break. The music is blaring. You know, it's a long time. A coach isn't going to sit there for 2 minutes and go over a few things. What I did notice with the extra 30 seconds was that Pete DeBoer for Canada runs the D. And I did notice that he was able to huddle with his guys for maybe 40 seconds of that time and at least show the whiteboard and go over a couple of things. Rick Tocchet runs the face-offs. Basically, his primary responsibility is set plays on the face-off, what they're doing, what we can do. So that's kind of been his specialty. And he had a chance to get his group together and spend a little bit of time with the whiteboard, but there's not a lot of talking because you can't hear a lot because it's just too noisy. And then Bruce Cassidy, you know, he runs the power play, and so the forwards on the offensive side of it. So they've all got their responsibility, and then you've got John Cooper going back and forth. And in fact, there were so many meetings during one of the breaks, under 10, second period, I did the interview with John Cooper for TNT, which we always do, And I could not get back to my spot because I couldn't get beyond, this is hilarious, but I couldn't get beyond, at that point he was a defenseman, so I was trying to get beyond Rick Tocchet, who was trying to talk to the centerman, and then there was Pete DeBoer was trying to talk to the defenseman. I was right between them. I couldn't move. You got three trainers right in there as well, and then I finally, you know, could get to my spot between the benches. But, I mean, there's a lot going on. There's a lot of coaches. There's a lot of trainers. There's a lot of assignments. And so I think people have to understand, too, that these players deserve a lot of credit for how they can compartmentalize all the information that they're getting in a short amount of time.
With just the return of best on best, now that we've seen all four of these nations face off, how much did you miss it? And just being in Montreal, what's the sense that you're getting of how much it means to these players?
Oh, a great deal. For anybody out there that thinks this is an exhibition, they're not right. It's not an all-star game. It's not an all-star moment. This is for your country. It's also a trial. It's also a tryout to make sure you put yourself on the map for the Olympics next year. So there's a lot that the NHL has put into this. I can tell you, after doing several Olympics, that walking into the Bell Center for practice on Monday, it felt like the Olympics. It felt like very serious business, very organized. The NHL has done a phenomenal job with the NHLPA. I'll just say this. And then the players, they don't want to lose. You think the USA, when they're presenting Johnny Gaudreau's sweater after the game for the player of the game, that they're not in this for real? Like, they're in it. They had Guy Gaudreau in the locker room. They had Mike Ruzzioni and Rob McClanahan. They had Mike Madonna for dinners. These guys, like, this is real. This is them saying, hey, we're relevant. We're here. And, you know, and for Canada, especially playing in Montreal, my goodness, they don't want to embarrass themselves. They want to make sure they come out as champions. So no, I just want to reiterate that Finland, Sweden, Canada, US, it's a shame that we don't have more countries there. I get it, but that's the way it is. But they're in it. They're serious. And they're rehearsing for the Olympics next year. Make no mistake about it.
And I think you're absolutely right. It's been a blast to watch so far through two games. Hopefully tomorrow is excellent as well. You're right. We'll see more teams at the Olympics. And then I love what the NHL is trying to do now with the World Cup every 4 years as well. Darren, really appreciate the time and the analysis. Enjoy the rest of the tournament. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, my pleasure, guys. Have a great day.
That is Darren Pang, TNT analyst, and of course, former NHL goalie as well, joining us, weighing in on his perspective. And I hadn't heard that Rick Tocchet was responsible for the set plays off the faceoff, which is notable because, of course, Rick Tocchet, not a plays guy.
No, not a plays guy.
But that's on the
but
power
a big puzzle
play.
Guy.
That's on the power play, to be fair, but he's not a plays guy.
That's true.
So, like, it's even strength
not
plays.
Not a power play
fine.
Plays guy.
No.
No, but you know, you just have to think of set plays as puzzles, and then talk. And then,
okay, I'm
into it.
That's what Cooper told him. He's like, just think of them as little puzzles, Rick. And he's like, okay, you got me. I'm into it.
Yeah,
I'm into it.
And he immediately like put on his jigsaw mask. Also, Rick Tockett responsible for blocking Darren Pang on the bench. That's his other big responsibility, and from what we can understand based on that interview, he's killing it.
Doing a bang up job. He's absolutely crushing it. And you know, we've been talking up the intensity of this tournament and the player buy-in, and obviously like from before it started to now in it, and we've seen it. It's actually, I think it's exceeding my expectations. And part of that is like all the extra stuff, right? But to hear Brady Tkachuk, and I know like he's not a playoff veteran or anything like that, but to have him to come out and say like, this is the biggest game of my career. You know, think of where the discourse, yeah. Think of where the conversation around this tournament was 2 months ago to now a player saying not the final, just this game against our rival is the biggest game of my career. Like that, we've come a long, long way from, oh, this is a joke because Russia's not there. This is Mickey Mouse. The NHL screws it up again. Like the stakes have ramped up in a hurry at this Four Nations tournament.
Yeah, I feel pretty lucky that I was talking to players about this prior to the season and could just like read the excitement. You know, and again, I'm talking about rank and file players, guys who are not in this tournament. But you could just tell, like, from that and just from asking around, like, you could tell how excited guys were. And you can tell when you watch these games. The intensity is high, right? This is what, like, honestly, I think that's partly why that Canada-Sweden game was so electric, Jamie, right? It was the same change in vibe and pace that we're used to getting like game one of the playoffs.
Yep.
Right? Where it's just like, oh, this is totally different. Let's go. I love this. You know, so I honestly feel like we just got it in February in a atmosphere where the conversation was like, will this be a no hitter? You know, and I never bought that. You know, our program was very pro four nations, yep, facing off. But
how could you not be? Four nations? I mean, and they're doing what? They're facing off? Wow.
They're facing off. And so, yeah, and they're facing off, and it's great. Keep facing off, Four Nations. You do you.
What's the I don't know why this popped into my head, but the line at the end of 1984 where it's like a boot stamping on a human face forever. It's like, what we need is Four Nations facing off forever. That's what we need. Just keep doing it, guys.
I did see someone post like images of four players from each of the four nations whose hairlines are receding. And it was like four hairlines facing off. And I was deeply upset by it, obviously, but also laughed.
Well, your hairline's not receding. It's just gone. It has receded. It has completed the process. It's absent from the proceedings now.
I mean, I work to keep it gone, though.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, we'll take
it could be receding if I took a trip to Turkey.
That's fair. We'll take a break. What a joy that would be for you. What a big moment for you that would be. We'll take a break here. Dmitry Filipovich up next here to talk all things Four Nations here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance, live from the Kintech Studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. Now joining us in studio to wrap up the week here, our guy friend of the show, host of the Hockey PDOcast across the Sportsnet Radio Network. He is Dmitry Filipovich. What's going on, Dim?
Fellas, what's going on? We're so back.
We are so back.
It's been a couple of weeks since we've done the last slot.
Best on Best is so back.
Yes.
That's what's so back.
Yep.
It's fantastic. I'm enjoying it. What stood out for you so far? I mean, two games, but what stood out?
Two games. I just think the pace of it. I mean, I think there was some question of how competitive it would be,
yeah,
whether it would be more of an all-star feel or whether it would truly feel like an Olympic tournament or even postseason hockey to some extent. And it really has felt that way. I mean, the first game with Canada and Sweden was probably the fastest game you watched all season,
yep,
from start to finish. Even, you know, USA-Finland, not necessarily as highly skilled of an affair, but certainly still incredibly competitive back and forth. And so I just think the quality of hockey has stood out to me more than anything.
Yeah, it's pretty fun to watch all of these guys on the same sheet of ice on the same team. And even, you know, Finland, which had, like, you know, some fringe NHL guys at the bottom of the roster, but still an incredible amount of talent up at the top of the lineup as well. For Canada specifically, and, you know, going into this game against the U.S. tomorrow, what kind of stands out to you about the matchup and Canada's chances at knocking off the U.S. here?
Yeah, there's a couple things I'll be watching for. If you watched the game on Thursday night with USA and Finland, USA made a point of getting after the Finland defenseman. Now that is, yep, the weak link of that team, but they were finishing every check, trying to kind of create turnovers off of forechecks, and created a few goals doing so. I imagine they're going to try to replicate that against Canada. There's an opportunity there for them, because after the Shea Theodore injury, guys like Parayko and Sanheim, I think, are vulnerable to making mistakes if they get pressured like that. So I'm curious to see if they go after them. We know that Canada is going to put in Sam Bennett instead of Konechny, most likely, to try to kind of match the Tkachuk factor,
yep,
and, you know, what they expect USA is going to throw at them. And so I'll be just looking for discipline, right? Because we saw 12 seconds of that Canada power play. It was incredible.
So good.
I want to see more of it.
Yes.
So if USA is going to go aggressively in the forecheck and try to do all these post-whistle shenanigans, if they take a couple dumb penalties or the crowd gets involved and it kind of heightens the atmosphere and things go off the rails, all of a sudden we're going to get to see more of that power play. And I think that's what everyone wants to see.
Yeah, well, that's what worries me, actually, about Sam Bennett as deterrent counterweight to the Tkachuk factor, is that, you know, Matthew's gift isn't just being rambunctious. It's being rambunctious in a way that tends to net his team power play opportunities. And Sam Bennett, you know, one thing that mitigates the undeniable value of his hard scrabble style is that penchant for putting his team shorthanded. I worry a little bit about that, Dim. Should I forget about it?
I think that's fair. I thought it was really funny last night. Matthew Tkachuk got involved in one of those post-whistle scrums, mm-hmm, and he threw a little cross-check, and he's, you know, starting to initiate something, and then he realized it was Sasha Barkov he was engaging with, and he quickly skated away,
yeah,
and was like, I'm not going to mess with him.
Oops.
I know where my bread is buttered, so I wouldn't expect him to treat Sam Bennett the same way. I think he would go after him if that were the case. I'm with you. I don't think Canada needs to necessarily respond in kind with trying to match Team USA on that side of things. I think they should be very comfortable engaging in a back-and-forth affair, trading rush chances the way they did early on in their opener, and hoping that their talent level up front especially wins out.
Well, we were talking, and I'll just jump in here, Drance, but we were talking earlier in the show, like, could we see the gloves drop at some point here? You know, Sam Bennett drawing in and all that. And I almost do think, from Team Canada's perspective, like, if Sam Bennett fights JT Miller 5 minutes in, and if that's almost like, okay, we've done the big, like, physical rivalry stuff, and now let's go play hockey, like, I actually think that could work to their benefit rather than kind of drawing it out and having it linger for the rest of the game. Like, go make your statement, you know, oh, we're just as tough as you, we can play this style of hockey, but then just get back to doing what you do best, which is skate way faster than them.
Yeah, I think the biggest message you could send is just winning the game and scoring more goals than them. And Finland obviously wasn't able to really, especially when they went down late in the second period, they had no sort of recourse for getting back into it and scoring enough goals to make a comeback. But early on in that game, they did have some success working the puck down low, especially with Barkov and Rantanen, and kind of playing a puck possession game, winning battles against USA defensemen, and then taking the puck to the net. And so thinking about what a line like Crosby, Mark Stone, and Nathan MacKinnon,
yep,
would do, trying to replicate that, I feel like Canada can have success against that Team USA blue line, which is obviously incredibly skilled and mobile. But beyond Jacob Slavin and maybe Noah Hanifin to some extent, not really a bunch of guys who are going to, like, box out in front of the net and sort of win one-on-one battles in terms of physicality. And so I feel like if you want to send a physical message and try to kind of get ahead of them, that's probably the most functional way, I think, to do so.
Yeah. Also, I thought Finland, especially late in the second period, right before America took the lead, actually was able to generate some two-on-ones. Yep. They kind of were wasteful with them, but it did look to me too like Finland was able to attack somewhat productively off the rush against the Americans. And that's also something that, you know, I think should be in Canada's favor tomorrow in tomorrow's game.
Yeah, I mean, that comes with the territory of we're talking about that aggressive forecheck that Team USA was trying to throw at Finland. If they do so here, we're going to see some of those two-on-ones. Eric Hall had a breakaway.
Yeah.
I think it was Rupe Hintz and Sebastian Aho had a two-on-one, and they weren't able to execute the pass.
Yeah.
But I think in more capable hands with Team Canada's forwards, if it's guys like MacKinnon and Crosby or McDavid and Marner, all of a sudden those become incredibly dangerous opportunities. And assuming Team USA plays it the same way as they did in their opener, I think those opportunities are going to be there for Canada.
What did you think about the McDavid, Marner, Reinhardt trio? I know, you know, Drantz has said like looked like maybe some chemistry issues earlier, but lots of reasons to think it should work as well. I mean, McDavid, like we talk about it as the other team learning to adjust to his speed, but I think there's an element of guys who haven't played with him before really needing to adjust to his style as well. What do you think about the upside of that trio?
Yeah, I think there's a bit of overlap because Marner at his best is the primary sort of puck carrier and transporter. And obviously when McDavid's out there, he's going to fill that role more so than anyone. So I think there's a bit of a adjustment period there. They had a few really intriguing opportunities off of these kind of passing sequences of the offensive zone that didn't come together or result in goals in that game. But I imagine if they get more opportunities, they will. So I thought it'd be interesting to put someone like a Braden Point, for example, with Mitch Marner, because I think that's a very complementary stylistic fit between the two. But we're probably going to see more runway of at least this top six is currently constructed.
Yeah.
They played well enough to deserve that opportunity. And so I'm curious to see if it yields more 5-on-5 offense.
I do feel like Braden Point to the top six is an adjustment that's kind of like out there whenever Cooper wants to make it. And I think like, look, I love Mark Stone, but if you want to really like ramp up
the
max speed as possible, like as much speed as we can put in the top six, like flipping those two guys seems like, We all talk about the McDavid-McKinnon nuclear option, but like, okay, get Braden Point up there. That's a pretty nice option as well.
It was interesting, especially when it sort of got to crunch time. It was 3-on-3 late in that third period against Sweden. You saw John Cooper put Braden Point with Cirelli and Hagel and obviously his sort of familiarity
my
with
guys.
Those three and then ride them and send them out pretty aggressively. And so it was interesting to see that. I think they're actually going to, at least based on the practice lines, that's probably going to be the line that starts out in this game against Team USA. And obviously, I mean, that's an incredible amount of just puck battle winning and speed amongst those three, so I like that quite a bit. But yeah, it's always fun seeing the dynamics between the different players, but also like the different coaches, kind of how they treat their own guys versus guys that they're obviously maybe not as familiar with.
Dim, I'm curious to get your take on this, because look, it's two games. We can't draw anything too significant in terms of conclusions from what we've seen so far, and yet, you know, I do think, despite what the score would suggest, that Canada's performance against Sweden was more impressive to me on balance than the United States' demolition of Finland. Who should be favored tomorrow?
I would say I went into the tournament thinking that Team USA had a slight edge in terms of just the full depth chart. Based on what you said there, though, in terms of what the initial returns we've seen on it and the fact that it will be a home game for Team Canada, I'd probably, in a coin flip matchup, give them the slight edge in that one. Obviously, if there's a rematch in the championship game, it'll be a different venue in Boston, and maybe we'll kind of need to readjust that. But I'd give Canada just the slight edge, just purely based on that. But otherwise, from a talent perspective, it feels like it's kind of a coin flip in two teams that match up really well against each other and should just create a fantastic hockey game.
Yeah, so the betting line is -110 each, so pure pick 'em.
Yep.
Despite Canada playing on home ice. See, I think they should be favored. I really do. I know the goaltending edge that the United States has is meaningful, but man, I thought what Canada was able to generate in terms of the volume of their chances and how dangerous those chances were, especially in the opening 20. But then again, after Team Sweden tied it up, I just don't think there's another team in this tournament with a gear like that.
Probably not.
Am I getting ahead of myself, though?
Probably not. I will say, though, like Jordan Binnington, to his credit, did make some tough saves, especially when it was tied and then in overtime. Gave up a couple goals as well that maybe he should have stopped. And I feel like despite all of this criticism of Connor Hellebuyck as not being a big game goalie and his struggles in recent postseasons, that's still such a major edge. So when you talk about two skater groups that are pretty well balanced and even for the most part, Canada has a bit more sort of high-end star power, but USA certainly has a depth throughout their lineup as well. I feel like the edge in net there gives you a bit more confidence in Team USA for me, especially if you're asking one of those two guys to make a big save late. I would lean, obviously, towards Connor Hellebuyck doing so. So I don't know.
Also, I feel like the Hellebuyck and the playoff stuff, to me, I read that more about him being out of gas at the end of the year rather than him being like a choker who can't play in the big moment. You know what I mean? So, like, to me, I don't look at that as a big question mark barely at all for Team USA. If this was happening in May, it'd be one thing. But it's happening now. Like, I think he's going to be fresh and he's going to be at the top of his game.
And also in a lot of those matchups where he struggled, his team was just completely overmatched.
Also awful.
And in this case, I mean, it's possible that Team Canada skaters just take it to Team USA in that way. But I also feel like it'll be such an even back and forth matchup that I wouldn't see them sort of just being completely caved in the way Colorado did to Winnipeg last postseason, for example.
Especially considering the injury to Shea Theodore, Travis Sanheim coming in, Thomas Harley is like, I don't know if he's in Boston now or Montreal, but he's kind of in limbo on call.
Kale McCarr's illness sounds like he's going to play, but still.
Yeah. Is there a snub from Team Canada that you wish they had taken at this point of the tournament?
That's a good question. I don't know. I feel like
Bouchard's the name that comes up.
Bouchard's the name, especially now for what I said in terms of dealing with a forecheck and potentially having more puck-moving talent. I feel like that would help. Honestly, Thomas Harley would be awesome on this team. It's a shame that because of these arbitrary rules that have been made up, which the NHL made, and
which they could easily break.
I know. It's like, no, we're beholden to these rules that no one else cares about and we enforced. He'd be an awesome fit on this team. He's such a smooth puck mover and all the skater and jumping into the rush, and he fits so nicely with this forward group. So that is a bit of a shame. But for the most part, I mean, it's kind of nitpicking. The forwards, especially like, I'm not the biggest Sam Bennett fan, but in terms of the group you saw in the opener with Travis Konecny in there instead, it's pretty tough to quibble with the 12 guys they had there. I mean, it's an immaculate group of skaters. So.
It's pretty good. Yeah. It's not bad. And I do, I mean, I agree with you with Thomas Harley, especially like as you consider, and one of the exciting things I think for me about the announcement about the World Cup is now it's okay, these tournaments are exciting, but we can also look at this as, you know, a springboard for, hey, does this guy impress enough to go to the Olympics? And, you know, in World Cup 2028, will that be an opportunity to introduce some new young players and see how they perform? And I think it creates this kind of opportunity. We're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit here. We'll get back to the tournament, but it creates this interesting opportunity to kind of really build the pipeline for these programs and say like, okay, let's look at a Thomas Harley. Let's get him around and see how he does. And then we kind of know what we have, or we have more confidence in him going into these next tournaments.
Well, I feel like an off-ice benefit here that doesn't necessarily, it's kind of tough to quantify, but we've seen it in the NBA, for example, with like the Olympics with Team USA, when all these guys get together and then either you're just like, hey, just from spending time in the orbit with the other best players in the world, you might not necessarily get to do so with on your regular club. You like pick up new habits, improve your own trade. So I think a lot of these young players, especially a Harley or a Jake Sanderson, who's the extra defenseman for Team USA, I feel like they're going to benefit just from being around some of these guys and kind of picking up little tricks here or there, getting a little bit better. Obviously, the sort of just like recruitment part of it as well in terms of future free agents
or super
like
team
guys to come over. I'm so fascinated with Team Sweden and Erik Karlsson, right? Because I feel like two very obvious fits are the two Florida teams, especially heading into next season in the summer. And so if you're Gus Forsling or Victor Hedman, you're just like yanking at either side of him, trying to convince him to come with you instead. And so I love stuff like that. Like the stories that we hear about the NBA from Team USA all the time, or I can never get enough of them. And I'd love to see more of that in hockey.
Man, Victor Hedman already dressed as a pirate for Erik Karlsson. If he loses that faceoff to Gustav Forsling, man, I mean, that would be painful.
I'd personally go with Gus. So, I mean, it's the pirate outfit is cool, but I feel like I'd go with the guy who gives me a likelier chance of winning right now.
Yeah, I'd go with Adam Clendenning, but
deep cut.
Dim, just part of my take, I think, when I think about what I've watched this week and how thrilling the hockey has been generally, is I really think about how, in some ways, when you put McDavid and MacKinnon tier guys on the ice with, you know, an environment where everyone's a first pair defender and everyone's a top line forward, and they're still the best in the world with margin, right? Like, their minutes still look the most threatening. In some ways, I feel like it makes me appreciate just how ridiculously good they are, with sort of like a greater level of depth or understanding. And so, you know, I think partly why I think Canada should be favored tomorrow, perhaps more heavily than they actually are, is I think Team USA is missing a major weapon in Quinn Hughes in a way that I just don't think Canada is. And I suspect it's going to matter.
Yeah. Yeah, I see what you're saying, especially with being able to throw the 1-2 punch of having a McDavid shift immediately followed with MacKinnon and just trying to sort of I think it's natural when you play either the Oilers or the Avs to kind of exhale for a second when that top line's off.
It's like, here comes Casey Middlestad.
Yeah, you're
nice.
Like, okay, we get at least 30 seconds here to relax. We can send someone else out there. And in this case, it's like, no, we're just like an endless barrage of that same speed. I will say, in watching that game, it was against Finland. But man, Jack Hughes and Austin Matthews as a combo looked downright terrifying as well. So when you talk about, in a different way, certainly, but like every change of possession, they were just immediately attacking downhill and looking for each other and getting grade A after grade A. And so those would be the two guys I'd say that Team USA needs to match, either the fastball that MacKinnon or McDavid are going to throw on Saturday. And if they do, I think Team USA actually has a chance to keep up. If not, and if MacKinnon and McDavid are just by far the best players on the ice, then obviously the edge is going to go to Canada.
Should we do a draft here?
Should we draft something?
Yeah, I was going to. Should we draft like potential heroes in the game tomorrow?
Ooh. Game-winning goal scorers?
Game-winning goal scorers. What do you think?
I like it.
You just made an incredibly pained look, but then you're like, I like it.
Your words said one thing, but your expression said an entirely different thing.
He did the like migraine headache.
Oh, sorry.
Brow pinch. And then was like, I love
it. I'm thirsty.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough.
Can you tell he's happy?
This is my happy face. Can I go first?
I love it.
You still look quite upset.
Sorry. I'm going to go first. Easiest pick ever. Captain Canada, Sidney Crosby. The Sidney Crosby moment on Wednesday, just that whole night for him was so great. I was like legit emotional thinking about all the times I've watched Sidney Crosby play hockey and how awesome he is. So I'm picking Sidney Crosby to come through again on the big stage.
Nice. That's a good pick.
Thank you.
Tom, you want to go second?
Oh, you want the snake?
Of course.
All right. I'm going to take, who else? Connor McDavid, best in the world. I think Reinhart and Mitch Marner are going to figure out how to better support his game. He's going to drop an absolute hockey nuke at Le Centre Bell tomorrow.
That's fair. I mean, he was so close a couple times in that opener. He had Victor Hedman in the torture chamber.
He was so good.
The one where he walked Matthias Ekholm after like flipping it up over some guy to himself. It was like, oh my gosh, this is outrageous.
All right. I'm going to go with Nathan MacKinnon here because he seems to, based on his initial performance against Sweden, really wants to take the outcome of this tournament into his own hands. And I feel like he's going to get his fair share of looks, especially playing with Crosby and his setting him up. So give me that. And the trigger man on the power play, of course, if those opportunities come. And then I'm going to go with Austin Matthews, who somehow has not scored in 7 games now, I believe, in a row. And he hit the crossbar in that game against Finland, is coming close. Him and Jack Hughes, as I said, look incredible together. Yep. And so it feels like a goal-scoring barrage is coming here for Austin Matthews. So I'll take him with my second snake pick.
I'll take Jack Hughes. Easy for me.
Yeah, they looked really good.
Yeah.
All right, 2 picks for me here. Yes. Right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
I know how drafts work. All right, I'm going back to Canada. I'm going to go with my guy. I've been hyping him up, Braden Point. And I'll go with Sam Reinhart as well. 57 goals last year, quiet, but he's in the bumper spot on that power play as well. He didn't get the touch on the puck on the first one because it only lasted like 10 seconds. But he's in a really good spot next to McDavid, incredibly good player. So I'll take Braden Point and Sam Reinhart for game-winning goals for Canada.
I'll take Matthew Tkachuk. Heartbreaking deflection game winner.
Oof. Pointing at the crowd like after. It's going to be awful. It's going
to
be awful.
Yeah, putting his hand to his ear.
Yeah, popping the crest and all that. Yeah.
Yeah, love it. Matthew Tkachuk.
All right, that's a good pick. I'm going to go with Cale Makar here because I think especially with that Shea Theodore injury.
I like it.
I suspect he's going to play a significant amount of it in this game as much as he can hang. Hopefully the illness doesn't slow him down or restrict John Cooper in that, and he's going to be at the top of that umbrella on the power play as well, and so I feel like he's going to get his opportunities. So give me Cale Makar.
Good pick. We were wrapping it there? Three each?
Yeah. Right? That's everyone has three now? Or does Dimitri have four?
No, I have three.
We all have three.
Should we keep going until someone takes JT Miller?
Perfect, then we're done.
We don't have that much time. I've got Crosby, Point, Reinhart. You've got
McKinnon,
Makar,
and Austin Matthews.
That's good.
Yeah.
And you've got McDavid, Hughes, and Tkachuk.
Hughes.
Yeah.
You took three.
I think I did pretty well value-wise.
You took three passers.
Yeah, but they're also on the ice. It's not like they're not going to shoot. Let's table this for next week. Let's table this for next week, but I do want to discuss Devon Taves at greater depth when we've got Dimitri on next. I actually thought he was the unheralded breakout star.
Yeah. What I want to do for our draft next week, because we'll be wrapping up, is players to be on the next in the Olympics that weren't in this tournament. That's what I want to do for our draft.
Ooh.
So we'll give it that requires a little preparation. So I didn't want to spring it on us now, but I'm giving us a week's notice. So, guys, there's no excuse, all right?
I'm already getting to the drawing board.
And you also have to say what Vancouver neighborhood they're from.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Drill down. Can you get the address? Can you get this cross street? Get as granular as you possibly can here. What elementary school did they go to? That's what we're looking for. All right, everybody, enjoy the games tomorrow. It should be a blast. We're actually off on Monday for Family Day, but there's hockey on. It's the final games of the Four Nations on Monday, so that's exciting. We will catch up with you on Tuesday for more Canucks talk here on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on The People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.